You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. This is John Williams. Thanks for joining us. Pete Zimmerman is our producer. Paul Nolte is our first guest, the wealth manager at Kingsview Asset Management. Welcome back, Paul. I'm glad you could join us.
Nice to be back with you again.
I wanted to pick on a different headline. A moment ago, I previewed that the S&P tops 4,000, but there's another headline that sort of caught my eye. The economy, said CNBC, is expected to boom in the second quarter. That's good news for stocks. Like, stocks need more good news, but I am encouraged if the economy is going to boom in the second quarter, and I'm curious what that would look like. What are your thoughts about all that?
It was an interesting analogy. I'm stealing from somebody else. They're calling it the adult spring break that may last for a few months. And really what that means is there's been so much pent-up demand as everybody has been sheltering in place, restricted movements, et cetera, that as we start to open up the economy and as we're allowed to go out, go to restaurants, go to museums, et cetera, that there's just so much that people want to do and are anxious to do, that we're going to see an economic growth, probably something north of 6% over the next couple quarters, that will provide a lot of money going into corporate coffers. And a lot of that has come from the various stimulus packages that have put a lot of money into consumers' hands that they really haven't spent much of so far.
If you were going to chart that, what would that look like the next 12 months?
You know, I think what it's going to be is we're going to see a pretty big spike and maybe a flattening out in after the first of the year. And then I think we're going to get back to something that passes for normal. And that may be 2.5% GDP growth because, again, it's going to be a lot of spending that happens, and then once that gets used up, we're going to be left on spending what we earn as opposed to maybe what we're given by the government. We hope that program stops at that point and everybody has a job that wants one.
Yeah, that would be the new norm. It's been a long time, it seems like, since we've really had a norm. Do you think that stimulus bill is a good idea, speaking of the government sending money out?
You know, when the government does anything, they tend to overdo it. There is certainly a very big need for a lot of people that are still not working, still trying to find work. And I think those areas absolutely need to be targeted. But as we all know, when you look at and you look underneath the hood of a lot of these bills, there's a lot of special projects, special pet places that money goes that you kind of scratch your head and go, is this really a good thing for it? So, yes, some of it is needed. I would say much of it is probably overdone.
The president said, let's be bold. And I thought that's pretty boilerplate bravado. You know, I don't know that we need bold right now. I mean, it does seem like the economy is doing well. You get the feeling that the jobs are going to come around. So maybe we actually don't need a bold infrastructure bill right now.
Well, the infrastructure I think we do need, certainly as we all drive around the Chicago area and the upper Midwest, we know the roads need to have some work done and the bridges do as well. And if that's the infrastructure, I'm all for it. But again, with a lot of the bills, there's a lot of other things that are included in those. And you're right, we may not need to be bold, we just need to get people out and moving about. Yeah. And that comes down to the various states allowing that to happen.
What do you make of this S&P 4000 level?
I've got my S&P 2000 hat, I got both of them sitting here, so I've got my S&P 4000 hats ready to go. Yeah. It's a number, it's a nice round number, but outside of that, I don't think it bears a lot of headlines. From our perspective, it's an expectation that things are going to get really good really quick. And so investors are looking at that saying profitability is going to be great this year. We need to be in the markets.
Well, if you wanted to cheer on one index and you had to pick between the NASDAQ, the S&P, or the Dow, which one would you root for?
I would root for the Dow because it is a little bit more opening based, if you will. So it has more dirty stocks. It's got Caterpillar in it. It's got some other financials and other companies that are going to benefit from an economic opening. The technology was beneficiary of last year's economic shutdown. So if we're allowed to be out and moving about, and the economy does grow at that 6-7% rate, a lot of the companies that are in basic materials and chemicals and stuff like that, I think are going to be very good companies to be in over the next year.
What did people do with the $1,400? Were they paying bills or were they actually stimulating the economy?
A lot of them were paying bills. I mean, if you take a look at consumer debt levels right now, they're among the lowest that we've seen in decades. So, again, not a lot of people were out spending money. So they used a lot of it to pay down debt and improve their balance sheets. Corporations did some of that, but the government is now the one that is sitting on the most debt. And that's very different than what we saw 10, 15 years ago when it was a lot on the consumer side.
Well, one last thing, though. I mean, is that the trade? So people didn't go out and stimulate the economy. They paid down their own debt. Isn't, I'll argue, that a form of economic stimulation down the road? If I have less debt, I will spend money maybe at Christmas time?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's part of the thesis that as consumers are in a very healthy position to go out and spend money. It's just now a matter of opening up the ballparks, the museums, et cetera, so that we can go out and do that. And that's really where we're looking at the big economic pop to come over the next 6 months as the vaccines take hold and hopefully allow everybody to be able to get back to what we were all used to in 2019.
Nice to talk to you, Paul. Paul Nolte, Wealth Manager, Kingsview Asset Management at kingsview.com. We'll visit again. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
Shara Tipkin is a senior reporter at CNET. Thanks for joining us today, Shara. I hope you're well.
I am. Thanks for having me.
Okay, here's what that was about. People's trust in tech is at an all-time low. Isn't it ironic that when tech can do more now than you ever would have dreamed, people say, yeah, not so much. I don't know if I like it. I don't know if I trust it. Talk about that.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, the pandemic showed us that we all cannot live without technology. But we've also seen a lot of misinformation spreading on social media. People just are starting to question what they're seeing, question the impact it has on their lives and mental health. And that's just really making people trust tech less than they have in the past.
And maybe it's fair enough. And maybe another thing is realize that, like television, we become over-dependent on it, that Zoom screens and computer screens, as amazing as they are, aren't necessary. Too much of that is a bad thing.
Oh, definitely. And I think people see the same thing with social media. The algorithms that are designed by Facebook and other companies are created to get us to stay on there and to spend as much time on social media as we can. It feeds us to, when you see something, you want to see more. And then all of a sudden you've been on social media for 6 hours and didn't even realize it. These are issues. Companies have tried to do things to kind of help us monitor our screen time. Like Apple can tell you, like, hey, you've been using social media too often or things like that. It's definitely something that people are very conscious of.
Talk to me a little bit about April Fool's Day. That's today. I'm not into the jokes and pranks, but the world sometimes is. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it backfires. What have you all noticed at CNET?
Yeah, this is, I think, the least favorite day of everyone in media, basically. Any news that comes out, you have to be kind of cautious. Like, is this real? Is it fake? There was some news that came out earlier this week that from Volkswagen, saying that they were going to rebrand as Volkswagen, like V-O-L-T, for their new electric vehicle. They insisted it was true. They put out a press release, and then it turns out, oh, hey, this was actually just an early joke. People are not really laughing about that. People are kind of upset about
that. That's not true. They're not going to come out with an electric car called the Volkswagen?
Well, they are going to come out with an electric car, but they are not renaming the whole company Volkswagen. They're still going to be Volkswagen.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Guess what? That's not so crazy funny or so bizarre that it's funny to think people would buy into it. that's logical. So I'm not sure that Volkswagen, who, by the way, has had some public relations issues in the last couple of years with their consumers, I'm not sure they're in a real solid position to be super jokey about their product.
Yeah, I mean, and that was the big issue. Like, the, you know, Volkswagen lied about their emissions, and, you know, this was a huge, huge issue for them. So people aren't seeing this as, haha, this is so funny. People are seeing this as, hey, you guys are lying again. You're lying to consumers. You're lying to the public. Did you really think this was a good idea?
Wow.
Apparently they did.
That's very German. That's in Germany. That's funny joke. Okay. I don't know what
actually,
I just
said. It was actually the U.S. business, though, that did it. I don't know that the German, you know, parent company had anything to do with it.
Any other April Fool's Day news out there?
Yeah, and there's actually one that I really like that I wish was true, which was TaskRabbit. So you can contact them, and they'll help you do things like build your IKEA furniture, you know, or pick up groceries, things like that.
Sure.
They were joking that you could, you know, deliver real rabbits to your door. You know, I personally would love to have a rabbit delivered to my door for a couple hours and just, you know, cuddle with this cute bunny.
Oh, but sort of like a comfort animal. They'll deliver a rabbit to your door, and then you get to pet it and play with it for a little while, huh?
Yeah, exactly.
A
but sadly,
yeah.
Not true. Yeah, and then there's, you know, some other jokes. Another company came out with a 100,000-piece all-blue jigsaw puzzle that is sure to cause anyone a lot of anxiety trying to actually put that together.
Cauliflower peeps. Okay, that's kind of funny.
Yeah.
The green giant.
Velveeta skincare cream. No, thank you.
And then there was, what was the Duolingo thing? What did they do?
Yeah, they had a toilet paper roll that has a foreign language on it. So while you're, you know, sitting on the toilet, you can learn phrases in a new language. And personally, I was like, that's not that bad of an idea.
I feel the opposite about that as I did the Volkswagen thing. I think you guys should do that. That's not a joke. That's a good idea.
Yeah, there are a few jokes where people are like, hey, I actually wouldn't mind that. There was this, somebody created a mouse, a computer mouse that looks kind of like Elon Musk's Cybertruck, the Tesla Cybertruck, you know, that was kind of this like angular silver kind of harsh looking thing. It made a mouse. And, you know, like my colleague who wrote about it said that it actually looks kind of cool. So, you know, there's always some jokes where you're like, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. But then there are some that are just like realistic enough that they are almost believable.
What else is on your agenda today? What else is going on at CNET that we should know about?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one thing that's been happening is our Amazon reporter is keeping an eye out for results of a union vote in Alabama. So about nearly 6,000 warehouse workers in an Amazon factory voted over the past couple months about whether they were going to unionize. And it was the first vote like that in about 7 years. And there are no unions of Amazon warehouse workers in the United States. So if they vote yes, that's, you know, a huge deal. It'd be the first Amazon warehouse worker union in the country. You know, we don't know when the results will actually come. I think they're going to be scrutinized very closely. And, you know, it could take a while to actually find out the results. But that's something that we're just, you know, kind of on the lookout for.
Did you say that there's no Amazon workers in those warehouses are unionized?
Yeah, none in the country. You know, there's some overseas, but none in the U.S. are unionized. And it's really notable that this is happening in Alabama, which is, you know, the South is not traditionally union friendly. So the belief is if this gets approved there and the workers in this factory decide to unionize, that we could see happen in a lot of other places in the country.
I wonder what that would do to the cost of Amazon products or services. Maybe, I mean, they're so gigantic. The CEO could probably find the money under a sofa cushion, but that's taking a position on it. So maybe I'll reserve my judgment. I mean, is anybody calculated? I suppose the company has said something about that.
Yeah, we don't know exactly how much it could have an impact. I mean, it depends on how many warehouses could unionize. You know, Amazon said, yeah, it could raise prices. You know, we could see delivery delays if, you know, because this would give the workers the right to strike or, you know, demand better hours or pay or things like that. So there are effects it could have on consumers, but we don't really know. And also, you know, these are essential workers who have been making sure that we have toilet paper, you know, all of those things that we've been ordering like crazy during the pandemic. These are the people who've been boxing it up for us and, you know, making sure that we get what we need. So, you know, they are trying to make sure that they are able to provide for their families and, you know, have good working conditions. So, you know, we'll just kind of have to see how it plays out. But it's something that people are really keeping an eye on.
One more minute left with Shara Tipkin. She's a senior reporter at CNET.com. The administration's infrastructure plan has been criticized because some of the things in there aren't traditional infrastructure, but I suppose you could easily put broadband in there. There'd be some hardware and then services. What is the plan and how likely is that to come to fruition? What will it mean?
Yeah, so Biden is earmarking $100 billion over the next 8 years to make sure that every place that doesn't have broadband in the U.S. has it. Another part of it is making sure that it's affordable for people. So, you know, the FCC in January said that if you consider satellite to be broadband, then everyone in the country can be covered. We all know that that's not true. You know, Microsoft has kind of looked at the situation by seeing how fast people download its software updates, and it found that basically half of the people in the country are not accessing the internet at broadband speeds. You know, part of that is because they don't have a connection. Part of it is because they can't afford it. So Biden is trying to make sure that everybody in the country can get on the internet. You know, it's a basic need like electricity. And I think that that's how they're looking at it now. And, you know, trying to make sure that it gets to everyone so we all can get online.
Okay. Always interesting writing and reporting from CNET. Shara, it's nice to talk to you. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks for having me.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN Radio. This is John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's our producer, and Ryan Glenn is our next guest, the owner of Chicago Plants. Chicago-plants.com is the website. Thanks for joining us today, Ryan. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. Thanks so much for having me on.
How's business?
It's been great, very surprisingly. Plenty of people doubted opening a business in the middle of a pandemic, but surprisingly, I think it's because of the pandemic that it's grown as quickly as it has.
You were in finance and healthcare originally, right?
Yeah, that's right. I spent a few years, I'm a CPA, so I was with public accounting for a little bit, decided to go private, and then when the pandemic happened, lost the job that I had, I decided it was kind of time to do something on my own, and plants had always been a passion of mine, so bringing that to a broader audience that I saw was really getting into plants, both those that already had it as a hobby were just taking it up more than ever during the pandemic, and plenty of people coming to the store saying they've never owned something green in their life, but they'd like it in their apartment because they're spending all day there now.
So did you plan on doing this because of the pandemic or it just turned out that way?
I'd say more so it just turned out that way. I kind of took advantage of the opportunity rather than, you know, hopping back into the job market when I lost the position that I had. You know, I figured it was something I'd always wanted to do and no better time than, you know, the whole world being turned upside down to kind of take that chance and do something different.
Yeah. But plants, I mean, so that may be your passion, but it would seem to me like there's two problems with your plan. You ready for them?
Sure.
Well, number one, I don't know, that's not your training. That's not your background per se. And number two, it's hard to anticipate the spending habits or behaviors of people during a pandemic. We'd never had anything like this. So this strikes me as a gamble, albeit in hindsight, maybe a pretty good one, right?
Yeah, I think those are both fair points. To the first one, it was, I would say, more or less a semi-professional level of training that I do have in horticulture. I actually kind of paid my way through college working at a local arbory. I grew up in southeastern Wisconsin and spent some summers with Wachtell Tree Sciences. So it was kind of through that I got to spend a lot of time with professional horticulturists, really gain the appreciation that I have on a more, you know, scientific level of plant care. And then it was really just from a background in accounting and having that CPA, that was what, you know, really springboarded me into opening a business about something that I really am passionate about. But yeah, as to the second point, I think that's really valid because as much as we saw this huge boon and people rushing to plants as a, you know, form of solace during the pandemic, to raise a question like, is that going to continue? I think is fair, but it's not something that just started now. I mean, I myself have been reading books from the 50s and the 60s about, you know, the plant trends then, because right now there's such an influence over which plants are popular because of the likes of Instagram and social media. But, you know, nothing has actually changed in the last really century when it comes to an avid interest in people having plants at home.
So how does your business work? Do you deliver? Do I come to your store? Do we do it online? What's the plan?
Yeah, all of the above. That was kind of an important part of the inception for me, was having that e-commerce side of things so people can order online and have delivered right to their door by an individual that's, you know, wearing a mask and taking proper precautions. Because I completely understood myself as a cancer survivor. If you didn't have to go into a store and there was a way to get a product to your home, you know, in a different fashion, that was really important to a lot of folks. And I wanted that to be out there. But for those that do want to come into store, we are open 6 days a week, 12 to 6. And it's kind of for the folks that really do want to see that plant before they're taking it home versus those that just kind of order online and then we'll pick out the best one for them.
You're in Wicker Park, right?
That's right. Right on the edge of Wicker Park in Bucktown.
Yeah. So what plants are popular right now? And is it just is it just green plants, or do you do flowers too? Talk about that.
Yeah, so really strictly kind of tropical foliage plants. We do have some flowering varieties, but, you know, I certainly wouldn't consider us a florist by any means. We're really focused on the plants that you appreciate for their foliage. And, you know, there's no flowers that are necessary to kind of appreciate their beauty. I'd say really the most popular, you know, trendy plants right now are the philodendron varieties, mainly because they're one that aren't too hard to care for. And you still can appreciate and both the amount of time you put into it, and then also just the different situations we have at our homes are a little more flexible with the likes of a philodendron.
Yeah.
The Calathea is another really popular variety. It's actually from a lot of different parts of South America and Brazil. And it's one that's by no means the most suitable for most homes. I usually tell people that the Calathea is beautiful as it is. If you don't have a humidifier in the Chicago winter, it's not going to be humid enough in your home for that plant.
Would you say there's a certain symmetry between people's desire for green plants and the explosion in interest in puppies that people had over the pandemic?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. I think it would be foolish to not make the correlation, because not everybody necessarily wants to put in the time and effort to have a plant, or I'm sorry, to have a pet, whether it's a cat or a dog. But a plant is something you can still watch grow, and you can talk to it every day and care for it, and you still get some of that satisfaction without necessarily the obligation of taking an animal for a walk a few times a day.
And here's a tip. If you can't keep a plant alive, maybe you're not the person for a dog right now, because you got a lot on your plate.
Yeah.
So maybe start with something green and then go with something furry. So you say business is good. Can you give me any numbers, percent growth? How many people are working with you? What's revenue like?
Yeah, so I started off really kind of just myself wearing all of the hats between the deliveries, the website development, you know, obviously the financials, but then also in store. And it was within a few weeks that I realized I needed a few people to kind of help out, especially around the shop. And so it started as myself and two others, has grown to myself and a team of 8 people at this point.
Wow.
And, you know, they've been integral in kind of helping me grow. One individual who I am so lucky to work with is a former social media coordinator for the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. And that's something that I really don't have any expertise in, kind of the social media marketing aspect of things. So having her on board has been very helpful in kind of expanding those efforts. But yeah, as far as, you know, the numbers go, when I started out, I kind of put on paper that if we were grossing 10 grand a month in sales, I was going to be pretty happy about it. And then that slowly became 20, and it's looking like 30 with the last month or two. So, month over month, we're continuing to grow. And I think the most shocking thing to me was opening in September. It was beautiful outside, so people could still walk in. I imagine that for sure had to dwindle as we were looking at negative temps and, you know, the awful wind chills, but somehow people were still making it in. So they were willing to brave the weather to still get their plants.
Okay, Chicago. By the way, I got a great idea for you. Social media. Run this by your orchestra person. One of the plants has a Twitter account.
Interesting. I kind of like that. Tell me more.
That's all I got for you. So maybe the TikTok page and it stars a Shuffalera or something, and you post wacky videos. It's wearing a Cubs hat today. I don't know. You got an expert over there, but that's just my idea, and you're free to use it.
Jen, I like that. I'm going to run with it.
Well, listen, if it's profitable, I'd like a percent, but otherwise you can have it. Ryan Glynn is the owner of Chicago Plants, Chicago-Plants. Is that how we do it? Chicago-Plants.com.
That's right, yep.
Ryan, congratulations. Nice to talk to you. Continued success.
Thank you so much. Take care.
Be looking for, on his website, a tree with a Sox hat or something. It's 12:45. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on WGN. Okay, Steve Grzanich, more business news, please.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new jobs grant program has launched in Chicago, focusing on small business owners. Founders First Community Development Corporation is behind the Job Creators Quest grant program that will award grants ranging from $1,500 to $11,000 to 10 minority-owned small businesses. Businesses must have annual revenue between $100,000 and $3 million and between 2 and 20 employees. Business owners must be people of color, indigenous persons, veterans, women, or those who identify as LGBT. Applicants can apply online until April 30th, and recipients will be chosen in May. Google has updated features on Google Maps that are being rolled out in select cities, including Chicago. Those features include live view augmented reality directions to airports, transit stations, and malls. The AR feature allows you to hold your phone up indoors and see arrows and icons directing you to your destination. In addition to Chicago, the features are available in Long Island, Los Angeles, and several other communities. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, you know, it's just funny because thank you, Steve Ruxton. I'm just making a note, Steve Alexander. That's Steve Ruxton. Before that, you heard from Steve Grzanich, and now here's Steve Alexander. And after that, later this afternoon, there's a guy named Steve who has a show here on WGN Radio. So, so lucky us. What's news in agribiz?
John, we're coming up on the 14th anniversary of what sounds like the beginning of one of your speed jokes.
Yeah.
A coyote walks into a bar. Except it wasn't a bar. It was a Quiznos at Adams and Wabash in the Loop. April 3rd, 2007, it walked in, sat down in the beverage cooler. The place emptied out. Animal control got the coyote and took it to a new home out in the country. There are already plenty of coyotes in the country already, something ranchers and farmers have to keep an eye on, especially now during calving and lambing season. And here in Cook County, including the city, there are over 2,000 coyotes at any particular time, and there are more on the way because
it is mating and whelping season.
Natalia Duraviani is Director of Communications for Cook County. And before she tells us how to avoid coyotes, let's get one thing clear.
Coyotes are an extremely important part of Cook County's ecosystem. Actually, one of the animals that they feed most on are rats. So they really help control our rat population in Cook County and in the city of Chicago.
I suspect there are some Lincoln Park residents who think those coyotes need to work a little harder at killing rats in that neighborhood. But anyway, coyotes are just as afraid of us as we are, or should be, of them. So here are some things to do to make sure we and our pets stay socially distant from those wily ones.
We need to ensure that we are always supervising our pets when they are out, and that includes in our very own backyards. Even if we have high fences, coyotes can climb a high fence. Coyotes are also extremely intelligent, and they can learn our patterns. So if we're always letting Fido out at 9 o'clock at night, let's say, they'll actually be ready and waiting for him. If we're walking our pets, we should walk our dogs on a short leash. We don't want our dogs to accidentally disturb a coyote den.
And your cat, keep your cat inside.
We have found that cats are a pretty big food source for coyotes, especially this time of year.
Natalia, I should say, Duraviani of Cook County says do not leave food outside either, including making sure that seed from bird feeders doesn't fall on the ground, because little critters will show up to eat that, and that's potential dinner for the coyotes. Yesterday's USDA report on how many acres of corn and soybeans are expected to be planted this year sent the markets crazy, and traders' heads are probably spinning today. Beans went up 70 cents yesterday. Right now they're down 30 cents. Corn was up 25 yesterday. It's down 2 now. Wheat is right now down about 5. Today, we are celebrating National Burrito Day, also National Sour Bread Dough. Sourdough Bread Day. That's your money on 720 WGN.
Wintrust Business Lunch continues at 12:53. Amy Guth is joining us. Amy, Paul Simon is selling his song catalog.
Yeah, he has joined the ranks of some other music greats. I think you and I talked about Bob Dylan not that long ago.
Yep.
But Paul Simon has done the same. He sold his entire song catalog to Sony Music. And the terms of that were not disclosed. But, you know, the same with Bob Dylan. When Bob Dylan sold his, it was estimated to be worth about $300 million. So you can kind of guess Paul Simon's probably in that same neighborhood. But Neil Young did this recently. Stevie Nicks has done this. And it's kind of joining these music greats that are selling off their song catalog. So we'll see what happens there. You know, when Neil Young did it, he was very specific about these cannot be in jingles. These cannot be. He had some rules about what could and could not happen to his songs. So we'll see. I think more will emerge about Paul Simon here. But when you think about, you know, the late 50s when he started with Art Garfunkel and just the body of work since then, that's a lot of music.
I know he split up with Art Garfunkel. I wonder what Garfunkel thinks about this, if Simon had the rights. The big thing that's making me scratch my head is he's 79. If you want $300 million, go get it when you're 69. What are you going to do with $300 million when you're 79? He could live 25 more years and have a nice long life. But what does he need the money for that he's selling his catalog?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very valid question. We shall see what he does with that. You know, he made a statement. It was very positive. He said he was very pleased to have Sony Music Publishing being the custodian of his songs for the coming decades. So, to me, I feel like he's probably, he must have some plans for that to get what I'm sure is a large sum of money. Or he's thinking ahead of in terms of after his life, what does he want from his songs and what does he want them to be and whose hands does he want them to be in? Maybe he's kind of setting up his legacy for decades and decades to come.
Just listening to some Paul Simon music last night, putting together the Sunday Standards Music Show we do here at the radio station on Sunday nights. And I'm going to feature a Paul Simon song he sings about baseball. And since the baseball season has started, and boy, I got Paul Simon in my ear now. I'm going to be listening to more of that, I think. Talk to me a little bit about Honda recalling a bunch of cars, huh?
Yeah, there's a very long list. And so Honda and Acura models, they are recalling more than almost 630,000 vehicles in the U.S. There's a fuel pump issue that can fail and it causes the engine to stall. So this is such a big recall. It is a lot of Honda and Acura models pretty much from 2018 to 2020. That includes the CR-V, which is the smaller SUV from Honda. That's one of the top-selling vehicles in the country. So there's a lot of those on the road. There's no reports of crashes or injuries or anything, you know, happening to the car or its passengers. This is more preemptive. If you want, you can go to recalls.honda.com or recalls.acura.com. And again, if you have a vehicle made by Honda or Acura between 2018 and 2020, it's those models. You can go to those websites and check it out. You can, you'll have your vehicle identification number. It's a 17-digit number, and you can enter it there, and they'll tell you if your car is affected by this. And then dealers will replace the fuel pumps for free. But people will be notified by late May. But if you want to get a jump on it, of course, I recommend people just head to those websites and check it out. But it's a lot. It's the Accord, the Civic, the Coupe and the Hatchback, the Fit, the HRV, the Insight, the Odyssey, the MDX, the RDX. It's a lot of cars. So again, if you have a Honda or Acura vehicle made between 2018 and 2020, you might want to check out those sites.
I'll just mention General Motors, you told us, is also recalling more than 10,000 vans due to a fire risk. So if you've got a GM van, go to nhtsa.gov/recalls to find out more. Thanks for the heads up on that. Amy Guth, we'll visit again.
Thanks so much, John.